In the previous unit, we explored the question of what is our primary purpose and business as marketplace Christians. And we identified that our primary purpose is not just to make a profit. It's not just to be good people of integrity. It's to do those things for sure. But our calling is the same that's been given to all believers, which is to go into all the world and make disciples of all nations. And that is the great commission that Jesus gave to his followers, whether you're the pastor of a local church or you're a missionary in a traditional sense or you're a missionary in the marketplace. We are all called to make disciples. And the title of this course, again, is Biblical Standards for Businesses. And discipleship is really at the heart of what it is to set the standard in business. And that's what we're going to explore in this unit, and specifically, what does it mean to be a disciple-making company? And we're going to review just a little bit from the previous unit, because I really want to make sure that you have a good working understanding of this concept of discipleship. Maybe you've heard it throughout, you know, as you've gone to church over the years, or maybe you're brand new as a Christian, but you've heard this word discipleship and make disciples. What does that actually mean? And Paul simplifies it very clearly for us in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, when he says, "Imitate me as I imitate Christ." This is what discipleship is all about. It's, you know, it's not even just in the Christian faith, but if you're the disciple of someone, you are following them. You are following, you're watching their every move, and you are paying attention and applying the things that you're learning from that person. This is the concept of discipleship. And so Paul says, don't just imitate me, because if you're just imitating human beings, you know, we are all flawed. We all have weaknesses. We are all going to fail. And it's the blind leading the blind, unless you are following Christ. And that's what Paul is getting at. He's saying, as I imitate Christ, imitate me. Don't just imitate me, but follow me as I follow Jesus Christ. And then, again, the Great Commission is not just to go make a profit. It's not just even to go make converts. It's not even to go build churches. It's to go into all the world and make disciples. In the previous unit, we talked about how the marketplace is such a great place to do that, because that's where about 85%, at least in the U.S., that's where about 85% of the population, the working population, spends the majority of their working hours, is in a for-profit business context. And so we are called to go and make disciples. And what is discipleship? It's setting the standard. So it, being a Christian in business isn't just about getting trampled on. It's not just about being a doormat or allowing yourself to get taken advantage of. Oh, that person's a Christian, so, you know, I can kind of be shrewd and take advantage of them because they're just going to kind of turn the other cheek. That's not what discipleship is about. It's about setting the standard. And again, as Paul said, Christ is the standard. So imitate me as I imitate Christ. And we can do that on an individual level. We are called to disciple entire organizations, because ultimately we are called to disciple entire nations. And so you have to make a disciple. Your company, the culture, has to be in such a way that you are revealing the glory of God in your company. Then you can do that to your industry, and then you can do that, share the glory of God, spread the awareness of the glory of God, as Habakkuk 2, verse 14 says, "For as the waters fill the sea, the earth," which, what is the earth? Does it include the marketplace? Of course it does. "Will be filled with an awareness of the glory of God." So the glory of God, what is that? That's the weightiness of God. That means God matters more than anything in business. God matters more than business matters in business, because God is the one in whom all things, in whom we move, live and move and have our being. He's the one that set the whole world, the whole marketplace in motion. And so his will, as we read there in Habakkuk 2:14, is that the waters, that the whole earth would be filled with an awareness of the glory of God, because God is weighty. His glory is glorious, whether we realize it or not, but he's wanting us to make the world and starting with ourselves to become aware of how much God matters in our personal lives, in our families, in our businesses. And so what is the glory of God? Hebrews 1 verse 3 says, the Son, that's Jesus, is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of His being. So you can go back and translate and interpret Habakkuk 2:14 that God is interested in the awareness of Jesus Christ being spread throughout the marketplace. And that's what you and I are called to do as disciple makers, not only of individuals, but of companies, of industries, and of the communities that are impacted by the businesses in which we work. And so again, discipleship is about setting the standard. Setting the standard is, and what is the standard? It's Jesus. It's the kingdom of God. It's the will and rule of God. Those are the standards that we are called to set through the way we conduct ourselves in our businesses in the marketplace. So again, a disciple-making company is one in which the culture results in discipling the people within the company, because you have to start one-to-one. You can't just go to the masses first. And then once you're discipling your company, then the effect of that is that the company begins to make an impact in the industry and begins to set the standard in the industry. I'm going to share some examples about each one of these. What does it look like to set, to disciple people in the company? What does it look like to disciple the people in the industry, the companies in the industry? And then ultimately, you're able, through your business and through the culture of disciple making that's happening in your company and through the industry, that you can also make an impact for the glory of God in your community. So what's your culture of your company, of your industry, of your community is already being shaped by something. And so let's take an assessment of the culture of your company, of your industry, and the community around your company. How are Christians viewed? Are they viewed favorably? Are they sort of experiencing persecution of whether it's socially, physically? Because I know that we have people that are tuning into this course all around the world where you are, Christians literally are being persecuted. There is a very real, the reality is that people are imprisoned. People are physically beaten for expressing their faith. We need to understand that not everybody has it as easy as some of us do when it comes to the way in which we might view ourselves as being persecuted for our faith in the marketplace. But how are Christians viewed? What are the worldviews of the leaders in your company? What are the ethical norms? What gets celebrated in your company? And how are the customers treated? Are they sort of treated as transactions where we're just going to try to get whatever we can get out of them, really without regard for the whole person? How is it being perceived by the public? How is your industry? I know I'm a part of an industry that doesn't exactly have a great reputation with the public, because a lot of people that have come out, have a book publishing company, a lot of authors have been taken advantage of. And so my industry has sort of a stigma attached to it that I have to overcome as I'm working with authors. And what are the dominant beliefs concerning politics, religion, and other sort of hot button issues? These are some of the questions that can help you kind of identify what is the prevailing culture in your company, your industry, and your community. Again, your marketplace around you is being discipled by one worldview or another. It's aligning with one worldview or another. And this is taken from a great thinker. His name is Yuval Harari. He's not, as far as I know, I don't believe he's a Christian. But he wrote a book called Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. And he pointed out some very, very insightful, an insightful model for our thinking here, as we understand in the Western world in particular, and really worldwide, how there's been a shift from theism as the most prevalent worldview in the culture to, and the theism is where God is the supreme authority. So if you want to know what is the right way to conduct yourself in business, God in the Bible or whatever your holy book happens to be, would be the supreme authority on the matter. And then in the, from the Enlightenment, we then started to move into humanism where man is the supreme authority. So the prevailing worldview becomes, okay, that's nice that we have God as kind of in the Bible as a reference tool, but really the man and the intellect is the supreme authority for determining what is the right way to conduct ourselves in the marketplace and what is business all about. And then what Yuval Harari points out, you probably heard the first two concepts, is that now what we're moving into is what he refers to as dataism, where the man-made algorithm is the supreme authority. So when chances are the way you found out about this course is by some sort of search, some sort of online search. And that algorithm, be it Google or Facebook or another social network, you came across this course because an algorithm that some group of people put together that it led you to this particular search result, and now we're having this interaction here over the internet, and so you see this happening in the dating world where a lot of people are getting married based on the algorithm that matched up one spouse with another spouse. They went on some dates and the rest is history. And so the more and more as we go on road trips with our family or even just kind of going around town, we're in a place where we're not familiar. What do? We pull up TripAdvisor and we find out what is the best place to eat that fits our criteria, whether it's cheap eats or something that we're in the mood to splurge a little bit more. And so the algorithm has become such a key part of our life. And that algorithm, you can just imagine how much we are being shaped as a culture by the way in which the data, the big data is determining our decisions. And so these are some different worldviews that we need to understand. I think dataism is maybe not necessarily a worldview, but the expression of, and it just kind of magnifies other worldviews, depending on whether it was a theistic perspective that went into building that algorithm or a humanistic, man-centered perspective that went into creating that algorithm. And so we're going to dive in a little bit more to what humanism, the impact of humanism on the marketplace. There was a article that came out in the Harvard Business Review back in 1969. The title of that article was, Is Business Bluffing Ethical? It was by a man named Albert Carr. And he basically was suggesting that the way that you win in business is not by applying values and Christian ethics or, you know, such as the golden rule, but it's about approaching business the way you would approach a game of poker, where you're not trying to help the person across the table from you, the person next to you at the table. You're not trying to help them win. The object of the game is to get all of their chips into your chip stack. It's not to share your chips. It's not to sort of help them along the way. It's to keep your cards close to you. Don't let anyone else know. Don't give just information asymmetry where you've got the advantage, and that is the way to approach business. It's very much a just kind of self-centered way to approach business. And he actually, and this is a statement from Albert Carr, he argued that conscious misstatements concealment of pertinent facts or exaggeration. So you actually want to lie in the game of poker. You actually want to bluff, because these are all things that are permissible in the etiquette of poker. And so he's saying that that's the way you want to approach business. What do you think about that? He found no fault. And so how far does this go? So there was a CEO who allowed his company to sell mouthwash made with cheap and possibly harmful form of alcohol, just because it was cheap, just because it was going to help make the company more profitable. And the CEO testified in Washington, and this is what he said. I think it really kind of sums up what it sounds like, what it looks like to use humanism, a man-centered, if my own desires, my own gratification, self-preservation, these things are at the center of what it is to approach business from a humanistic perspective. He says, and he's testifying, we don't make the laws, we obey them. Then why do we have to put up with this holier-than-thou talk about ethics? It's sheer hypocrisy. We're not in business to promote ethics. And the translation is, we're here to promote our own self-interest as long as we're not breaking the law. And as a Christian, this is not what we're called to do. We are called to set the standard. Again, this is what discipleship is, to set the standard to Jesus. Because as Colossians 3:23 says, whatever you do, do it with all of your heart as working for the Lord, not for men. And certainly not for yourself, not for your own sort of humanistic, selfish ambition, self-interest, but to work as unto the Lord. This is what we're being told in Colossians 3, verse 23. So why is humanism bad for businesses? Well, because it just really, it's not just a matter of, well, this is against what the Bible says. It's just bad for business. It's really on a common sense level, which is so much of what the Bible is. Number one, there's no trust. And we know that the only way in which a marketplace can survive, and this is why many marketplaces around the world cannot survive, because there is such a lack of trust, where there's bribery going on, where you just can't really trust that the person that you're doing business with has a higher standard than just what's in it for me. The humanist cannot be, and I'm using humanist in a very broad sense. Really, it's whenever you're coming into business just for yourself, and not to honor God, not to live up to a standard that's beyond yourself, that this is what it is to be a humanist in business. The humanist cannot be trusted because his or her ultimate goal is to glorify himself, not his creator. And as Christians, going back to Habakkuk chapter 2, we are called to spread the awareness of the glory of God, which is Jesus. And we're called to do that in the business world. I mean, the marketplace cannot survive without trust. There's no contentment, because you're always wanting to go back to Albert Carr's poker analogy. You're always wanting to take more chips from the other guy and put it in your own chip stack. And you're always wanting more of what can never satisfy. Because in poker, I mean, you don't win until you get everybody else's chips. So there's also no rest, because you are always going to be trying to strive. There's burnout, there's family breakdown, because not only is my own self-interest in business more important than other people, it's even more, becomes more important than our own families. It even becomes in a strange way more important than our own physical health, when we're constantly striving, because the only thing that matters in business is trying to make a profit, trying to get more, trying to take more from somebody else. And ultimately there's hopelessness, because like it, and this has been attributed to many different titans of industry who said this, but it said that Howard Hughes was asked, what does it take to make a man happy? And he said, just a little bit more. And that is a hopeless way to live. And there's no relationship with God in a humanistic approach to business. Because when our aim is to worship our own self-interests, we know that we're alone in this effort. And that's a very lonely journey. So now we're going to get into how do we break this down to where we can escape the rat race of bringing this humanist worldview, this selfish, self-centered, using that poker analogy where we're trying to take everybody, we're always suspicious of other companies, of other coworkers, where we can't just fully put our trust in God. How do we start to tear down this stronghold? And I love this passage from C.S. Lewis. He said, we must attack the enemy's line of communication. What we want is not more little books about Christianity, but more little books by Christians on other subjects with their Christianity latent. So for C.S. Lewis, it wasn't just about writing Christian books. He's saying that we need more books written by Christians with latent Christianity, which is to say we're not necessarily going into our companies and just preaching a sermon to them the way that we've seen it done on Sunday mornings at our churches, but that we're called to demonstrate a higher standard of conduct in business. You can see this most easily if you look at it the other way around. Our faith is not very likely to be shaken by any book on Hinduism, but if whenever we read an elementary book on geology, botany, politics, or astronomy, we found that its implications were Hindu, that would shake us. It is not the books written in direct defense of materialism that make the modern man a materialist. It is the materialistic assumptions in all the other books. And so let me just stop right there. This is something that's very dangerous about the way in which a lot of Christians are conducting business, because the way that business conduct has been discipled for them is by other people that may claim to be Christians, but they've never been discipled in business to understand what are the biblical standards for business. And so they can easily fall into the trap, like Paul says, don't be conformed to the pattern of this world, because unless you're being discipled and making disciples, it is inevitable that you're going to fall into this humanist trap, whether it's materialism or whatever else it is in the business world. Continuing on here, in the same way, it is not books on Christianity that will really trouble him, but he would be troubled if whenever he wanted a cheap, popular introduction to some science, the best work, I mean, he's talking about the highest standard on the market was always by a Christian. The first step to the reconversion of this country is a series, and he's talking about the United Kingdom, is a series produced by Christians who can beat Penguin in the Thinker's Library on their own ground. Its Christianity would have to be latent, not explicit, and of course, its science perfectly honest. Science twisted in the interest of apologetics would be sin and folly. And that's C.S. Lewis from his book, God and the Dock. And so he's talking about if you really want to disciple nations, disciple your nation, then it's not necessarily going to be that you're going to go into your office and preach a sermon like you've heard it on Sunday morning, but you're going to live your life in such a way that people will, as Peter said, ask for a reason for the hope that is within you. So always be ready to give a reason, but in order for that to happen, in order for somebody to ask you, you have to live your life and set the standard in such a way that people actually want what you have. Getting more specific into what does it mean to be a disciple-making company? And when we're talking about bringing the Christian worldview into business over against a humanistic, self-centered, man-centered worldview, where should businesses set these Christ-centered standards? And this is going to be the remainder of this course. The one area, value-making innovation and competition, we're going to have a unit on that. Organizational process management, profit-making and profit management, marketing and sales, customer care and quality control, accounting and accountability, human resource management, business law, and risk management. And these are just some of the disciplines. These are all the disciplines that we're going to be talking about in this course. There are more, but this is really kind of a broader overview, because what I want you to have walking away from this course is a working knowledge of how to talk about, if somebody was to ask you, what does the Bible say about business law? I mean, when it comes to lawsuits, is it okay as a Christian to go and sue somebody that's taken advantage of you, or you perceive that they've taken advantage of you? In marketing and sales, one of the questions I get often is, how do you sell as a Christian? Because there are many people that are in industries where they're expected, they've got these quotas they have to meet, and they constantly feel like they're having to sell their soul in order to sell the products and services at the rate that they're expected to sell them. We're going to talk about profit and accounting and several other disciplines as well from a theological perspective. And so as a review here, what is a disciple-making company? And we're going to get into the specific examples of each of these. The culture of a disciple-making company will result in the discipling of the people within the company, discipling the industry, and discipling the community around it. Because it's about filling the earth with an awareness of the glory of God. And the writer of Hebrews tells us that the glory of God is Jesus Christ. He is the exact representation. He is the radiance of the glory of God. And so in the next segment, we're going to talk about some specific companies that demonstrate what it is to do each of those three points that I just mentioned: discipling the people in the company, discipling the industry, and discipling the community.